This is Mae Brussel, and it's the second half of a program named World Watchers, and it is the program series, continuous series, is number 771. And those events that I ran down very quickly are just an overview with a few of the articles and materials I've seen. I would like to do a lot more on each of them in detail, and I will as time allows, but it builds up to Ronald Reagan's coming off his mountain and then beginning to try to get the Senate vote so that there's no more stumbling blocks to any justices he appoints, the head of the FBI he will appoint, the policies, the money for weapons, or anything that he wants to do. He needs this Senate majority, and that was the introduction to his campaign. And if you think things don't happen like that, remember when Jerry Brown in this state was running against Pete Wilson, who became the senator from California. And we had an importation of 300 million fertile medflies, and he became the brunt of a lot of jokes. The people in the northern area of California became the brunt of melathion spraying done by Central Intelligence Agency airplanes. But the result of it was, and that was a war in this state, literally, was to get a GOP senator in, and Pete Wilson was the recipient of all that. And the medfly story really has never been written up in detail the way it should. Now, the second half of this broadcast, I want to go into the implications of two articles that are on the front page of Wall Street Journal today. I had 300 other things I was going to cover, but I couldn't pass these up because they're so terribly important, and you can get them right now at your library and copy these articles. Wall Street Journal, September 15th, 1985, has a front column on one side of the front page, and then the entire page not another column, but a whole full page by Jonathan Quitney. Now, Quitney, many of you know his name from the articles on the Nugenhand Bank. He wrote a book several years ago called Endless Enemies, which is a fantastic book. And when I saw the size of this article, I looked in to see, well, who wrote this? And, of course, it was Jonathan Quitney. The Wall Street Journal must respect him a lot, and I want to go on to the subject of the article, because this article has to do with the people, very influential with the Teamsters, two men, Merv Adelson, who recently married Barbara Walters, and Irwin Molasky. And the title of the article is Seeds of Success. Two Laura Marr officials have had ties to men of the underworld repute. And I'm not going to even begin to do anything but touch the just the edges of this story and the implications of the story, and then share it and outline it and do more with you later. Now, Jeff Gerth of Sundance, he wrote for Sundance Magazine, and it was closed after his brilliant article, had tried to expose the links of La Costa and the organized crime syndicate, and he published an article in Penthouse, and it went on for a long, long time, a suit. Mo Dalitz and the organized crime figures suing Penthouse magazine. It was an endless suit for 5 or 6 years, multi-million-dollar lawsuit of people in La Costa, California, who were funded by the Teamsters, trying to say they were not linked to organized crime. And this article mentions that lawsuit. So it's interesting that after fighting it for 5 years out of Penthouse magazine, that the Wall Street Journal chooses to use the entire page, page 18, and I hope there's more that comes tomorrow and the next day, about the Teamsters and La Costa. And why are they so important? When Jeff Gerth wrote his article, he made in Sundance, and I should make copies and reprint it. I'll copy and see how expensive it is. And most of you listeners, some of you have it, most of you don't know it. And it has detailed descriptions of the connections in Bahamas with the land group, the mafia, Richard Nixon, William Rogers, who just headed and covered up the Challenger explosion, and Bahamas, the headquarters of organized crime, and using that area for not only for the pleasure and profit of gambling, but it also was the nest in the 1940s of the Duke and Duchess of Windsor that set the scene for later when the mafia moved in there. And they were close to Rudolf Hess and Dr. Hermann Urban from Germany, the SS Gestapo, who was the Gestapo chief over Errol Flynn while he was co-starring with Ronald Reagan. And I'll do more of that in a few moments. The Bahamas were important to the British and to the world syndicate for profits of gambling, prostitution, and political right-wingism, mostly the political right using assassinations as a means to get up into power. So Jeff Gerst had written about William Rogers and Nixon and the Bahama connections, and John Connally, who was involved in ways that I'll detail later and have before with the Kennedy assassination. But this was the nucleus of a hit team operation, as well as drugs, for the purpose of putting power into the hands of these fascist dictators. So now this article comes out in the Wall Street Journal in 1986, and it begins with discussions of the Lorimar Productions. Lorimar, and it breaks down the studios they own, the Lorimar plans, and their television studios and their affiliates, CBS in Detroit and the CBS in Miami. And it has a chart of their connections. As I say, I'll outline it for you. And it mentions Mo Dalitz in this article. Mo Dalitz is very close to Paul Laxalt, very, very close. Paul Laxalt has been spoken of as a possible president of the United States. And he's part of that Nevada faction with that non-existent Howard Hughes, who was there, which was really the CIA and the Defense Department. And Dalitz and Laxalt worked closely with Robert Mayhew. And that ties into the assassinations of John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, and Martin Luther King that were part of the Permandex operation. Why this is coming out now, we can't figure out yet, but it's going to lead somewhere. Maybe it's George Bush's revenge against Laxalt, who Reagan has to favor, because Reagan is part of that inner team, that this work is being allowed to come out in the Wall Street Journal at this time. That's just a good guess of the underpinnings, because George Bush isn't a little softer you think he is. Now, G. Robert Blakey, the chief counsel for the House Select Committee on Assassinations, who covered up the murder of John Kennedy and Martin Luther King the second time around and locked all the material up for 75 years. G. Robert Blakey was the attorney for Mo Dalitz during his long lawsuit. And he never should have been head of the House Select Committee. And again, it opens up the whole investigation of the Kennedy assassination if the attorney and the mafia are all one. And then Blakey writes a book that the mafia killed Kennedy, covering up the Nazi connections, but also covering up LaCosta and Laxalt and Mayhew and Dalitz and the whole umbrella organization of plans to murder anybody who was in the way. It didn't have to just be John Kennedy, but he happened to be the president of the United States, and that was the most dramatic example of the way these teams work. Louis Neiser is close to this LaCosta group, to Mo Dalitz. He's a well-known attorney in New York who wrote the introduction to the Warren Report. He's closely affiliated with them, and he was also invited by NASA to be the attorney for the space astronauts when the space program began. And in the Torba document, you read where Wernher von Braun and Walter Dornberger from Nazi Germany had a role in the murder of John Kennedy and were instrumental through Bell Helicopter and Michael Payne to effect a convincing cover-up that would make it look like Lee Harvey Oswald did it alone. Now, they pulled a couple of jokes on us, and there's a little interlanguage going between these groups that may be too subtle. It isn't subtle for me, and I want to share it with you and go back to the story of Lorimar later. On the 20th anniversary of the assassination of John Kennedy, the news media was filled with the program Dalitz and Lorimar production. Close to Mo Dalitz and the mafia group, you read the article, the Wall Street Journal, and think of their connections. And they produced the TV show Dalitz. The question was, who killed JR? And every newspaper and every magazine and every talk show was filled with that. November 22nd, 1963, the night before, I believe, was that program, Who Killed JR? And the title of the program was Dalitz, and it was produced by Merv Adelson and Irwin Molasky. And it was a little in-joke because nobody was asking who killed John Kennedy, and was taking over from the question of who killed John Kennedy on the 20th anniversary of the death of Kennedy. And it had more to do with JR and the Dalitz show, so that it was a total diversionary from a real assassination to this piece of fiction. And the piece of fiction is titled by the very men who were involved with those people from Vegas that moved down to La Costa that have a role in this whole web network that goes to many places and many islands. But the article the Wall Street Journal has today by Jonathan Quitney just, again, begins to get into those people, which hasn't been done since Jeff Gerst got into them and studied them a few years ago. Now, it may be very coincidental, and it may be very funny or subtle, but I'm going to throw out just a story I've had in the news for the past few weeks, which is silly, crazy, but not really, because what you think is crazy in this news, when you keep it long enough, has some interesting code words or connections that I never pass off. I don't take seriously unless something comes up. But recently I read that Rudolf Hess, the lone criminal, war criminal, since World War II, who's kept in Spandau, Rudolf Hess, who was the most important man behind Adolf Hitler, who laid the groundwork for taking over South America in the 1930s, set up Nazi networks in all the South American countries, and hopefully then would move from South America to Central North America. Hess is still in Spandau. He's 92. And according to recent news accounts, and my favorite was from Reverend Moon's paper, where Arnaud de Borchgrave is the editor, it says Hess uses Dallas, the TV movie, to pass his time in Spandau. And it says Rudolf Hess is only allowed to see two TV movies, Dallas and Dynasty, in Spandau prison. His TV is limited to these. He's allowed to watch only those two, or Black Forest Clinic, or the soccer matches. Now, the soccer matches is another connection to this Odessa network. And I think it's interesting that the persons closely affiliated with the Mo Dalitz, Paul Exalt, CIA, Howard Hughes connections, working with the producers of the program Dallas, and this particular person is locked up in their prison and may be coincidental. Now, the real Hess, Rudolf Hess, Hitler's chief right-hand man who was the brains behind him, and Martin Bormann was the banking brains behind Hitler, Hess flew to the estate of Lord Hamilton. That was May the 5th, 1941. That was before we ever got into the war. Pearl Harbor didn't happen until December. Lord Hamilton and his operations were very closely linked later to the Oppenheimer family with the diamonds in South Africa and the connections that brought Henry Kissinger to the United States to join in the United States Army, U.S. intelligence, and then he was sent back to Europe as the war was winding down and was present from the Battle of the Bulge in December of 44 until May of 45, when Kissinger was put in a castle and was in charge of people like Otto Skorzeny and Klaus Barbie and top Nazis. He was just a young man. He hadn't gone to Harvard yet. Now, Rudolf Hess flew away to Scotland, and previously to that, he was very close, as I say, to the Duke and Duchess of Windsor, who moved to the Bahamas. There was talk that he had been to the Bahamas. And as I say, this was the headquarters or one of the stopping places of Dr. Urban to the Bahamas, to the Duke and Duchess of Windsor, as he took his yacht and many trips with Errol Flynn, where they worked with top Nazis in Mexico and in that area. And Urban also was active in Europe and around the world with his Gestapo work. In 1940, 1942, you remember Ronald Reagan was making movies for the Army, and he even hinted at the reunion of the OSS just a few months ago, that he possibly worked in the OSS when he was making Army pictures and duplications of Punemund, where Werner von Braun and Dornberger worked as Nazi war scientists with their space rocket engineers, known war criminals that were brought to the United States. He was in Desperate Journey in Santa Fe, those two movies with Errol Flynn, and his earliest contacts with Errol Flynn in Hollywood were the same time when Flynn was active in the Gestapo. Now, just recently, German President Richard von Weizsäcker has been asking to get Rudolf Hess out. I've just been reading a book given to me by a long, long friend and researcher, a world watcher, called Pius XII and the Third Reich. Richard von Weizsäcker's father was the liaison from Adolf Hitler to the Vatican, to Pope Pius XII. And this book is just filled, it's practically about Richard von Weizsäcker's father. Weizsäcker is the current president of Germany, and his father was the liaison to the Vatican from Hitler, and he's pushing to get Hess out of that building. Also, there's a book out now. It was published in 1984, but it's available, and I can tell you where if you want to contact me, called The Windsor Secret, New Revelations of Nazi Connections by Peter Allen, Stein and Day, 1984. I just mention it because this Hess, with his, maybe it's a joke, they say he watches Dallas, but there's even more about Hess that is also interesting. The people that are keeping them, and you might have read this in the paper, are having him write diaries. He keeps a diary, and they say the historians will never see it. As soon as he has filled these three volumes, they give him three volumes at a time, they take them away from him and they burn them, and they bring him more, and then they burn those. We really don't know if they're burning them, and we don't know if it's Hess, because there's been doctors who said he doesn't have the same war wounds as the Hess from World War I, and there's a strong belief by some people that the real Rudolf Hess could have gone on down to South America and organized, along with Lucio Gelli and people from the Vatican and the White House and from the European NATO countries that put in these military dictatorships and have supported them all along. He may still or could be the organizer of these things. And so he writes these diaries and they throw them away, and they may be just gibberish that have nothing to do with the past, because it may not be Hess. And also, I've mentioned before on World Watchers that I read that when Hess dies, he's 92, the Spandau prison has been ordered to be destroyed, and the demolition team are ready to place some kind of whatever it is that blows it up, and there's no chance of any fingerprints or remains of the building being there. So what he's writing is being thrown away, and where he's staying for this long time is going to be destroyed. And also Helmut Kohl, the current chancellor of Germany, who literally forced Ronald Reagan to go to a cemetery at Bitburg to honor the Waffen-SS before the entire world. Kohl and Weizsäcker was just in power at the time, pushing the President of the United States to these ceremonies and these banquets, a banquet for that Weizsäcker gave in Germany, and a wreath laying at Bitburg. They're working to get Hess out of this jail. Whether or not he is Hess, we don't know, and maybe it's just a figure of speech that they want him out. Now, there's one other thing he's allowed to watch besides Dallas and Dynasty, and that's the soccer teams. And that's interesting because Henry Kissinger, who was so close to Lord Hamilton and that group, he was a young man but stayed friendly, I'm sure, after the war. The group that where Hess knew to land, he was a pilot, landed on the property in Scotland of Lord Hamilton. The very people around Henry Kissinger that worked with Hess have also, with Kissinger's encouragement and so forth, had Kissinger being very active with the soccer games in Europe. He's a very big wig with the soccer games, and he works with Mr. Agnelli of the Permandex organization. That was the Clay Shaw, John Connolly, the Bahamas group that set up the assassination teams of political people. Agnelli is the head of Fiat. Henry Kissinger and Agnelli are very close and go to the soccer games in Europe. And this is one of the ways that Kissinger is head of Kissinger Associates when he's not Secretary of State or National Security Advisor, travels all over the world and participates in soccer. And Hess is allowed to see Dallas produced by this team from Texas and California and Nevada. And he's allowed to see soccer. And Henry Kissinger is closely linked to soccer, and he's used this, as I say, for one of his international networks to travel around and do the businesses he wants to do. Now, there was an article that I have of Henry Kissinger, a picture of him at a soccer game, and this isn't coincidental. This is an article written by Mark Sonnenblick, January 24th, 1986, this past January, and it's a description of Henry Kissinger's links to fascism and the death squads in Argentina and the soccer connections to those and his affiliation for the soccer games. This just came out 1986, but Henry Kissinger was also at the soccer game in Europe where so many people were pounced on by the British and murdered. Remember the terrible semi-mini Holocaust that took place? Kissinger was there with Mr. Agnelli. This article says the story begins 8 years ago, and it's being unfolded just now, and it took place 8 years ago, but it shows the role of Kissinger with soccer, which isn't far removed from what Rudolf Hess was setting up in South America, or the Hess who watches soccer now at Spandau. The story begins 8 years ago. The article begins, it began June 9th, 1978, when $250,000 in money was sent to Lima, Peru, from Bogota, Colombia, from a cocaine mafia chieftain who's now in jail in Madrid, pending extradition to the United States. And I guess that's why it came out now, because it's 1986 and he's waiting to be sent to this country. On June the 21st, just a few days later, 2 weeks later, week and a half later, Henry Kissinger sat with General George Videla, sentenced in December 85 to life imprisonment, and other members of the Argentine junta, cheering as the crack Peruvian soccer team miraculously turned itself into a sieve and allowed Argentina to score 6-0 for Peru. This oversized victory allowed Argentina to become the world champion, to create a climate of euphoria which enabled the corrupt and butchering junta to remain in power several years longer. A few days later, the Argentine Peronist magazine Linea accused the regime of bribing the Peruvian team to drop its defenses. This Roman circus was known among sports championships as having been paid off the Peruvian players of $250,000, and the Bogota suitcase would have remained secret, but it showed up in a flight to New York City where it was discovered by the United States Customs. The person who had it, Mr. Pardo, admitted he was hired by a Rodriguez for testimony, and he went before Judge Irving Kaufman, and he testified about what he was doing and how the money came about. And on the basis of his testimony, and Kaufman became the chairman of President Reagan's Commission on Organized Crime, he said that in 1981 he ruled that the mafia had a better claim to the $250,000 than the Colombian government. That Colombia was going to deliver it to Peru and for blowing the game, but it belonged to the mafia and mafia chieftain. Then it goes on, Henry Kissinger made Lima, Peru, his only stop on the way to Buenos Aires on June 20th, 1978, before the game. He had a private meeting at the airport with U.S. Ambassador Harry Schlaudeman, his protege and his most adept specialist in covert operations. Schlaudeman was appointed by Ronald Reagan in 1986 to become U.S. Ambassador to Brazil. It was the first time Kissinger had stepped foot in Peru since February 1976, where, as Secretary of State, he was forced to sit through a long indictment of the evils of his foreign policies delivered by General Miguel de la Flor, Peru's nationalist foreign minister. Kissinger was so enraged and mortified and he was terrified by Peru that he said that he left there, proclaiming a special relationship with Brazil 2 days later and turning his back on Peru. Then he goes to Argentina, where the championship was 6-0, and it allowed the Argentinians to become well-known in the soccer team and to travel and have this honor at the time the death squads were administering their terror. Now, some suspected that President Francisco Morales Bermudez had insulted Henry Kissinger in Peru. He blamed Kissinger for facilitating and making the 1975 military coup in Peru, which ousted General Velasco Alvarado and put him in power. He blamed that coup on Henry Kissinger's shenanigans. And it's down in Peru where Stefano de la Calle, the head of terror who inherited all of his techniques from Otto Skorzeny, Hitler's most dangerous man, and working with our CIA, he's down there now spreading the terror and shooting judges and people in Peru to force another coup in that country. The article goes on, Kissinger arrived at Buenos Aires Airport for the game. He pontificated with a smile. He said, "I don't know much about football, but Argentina will be the champion." It was a soccer game. Once again, the soothsayer was showing off his great wisdom, as he did when he predicted that Italian Premier Aldo Moro and Pakistani Prime Minister Ali Bhutto, that they would meet violent death for opposing his policies. He told them that, and of course, both of them were killed, and you see what's happened in Pakistan since then. Kissinger gloated about the World Cup that would go and help the good image of Argentina. A special agency was created to prepare for the World Cup. They spent $520 million, not counting airports and infrastructure, in game preparations. Most of the money, $520 million, was never accounted for. General Omar Achtis, an army construction expert for honesty, was assassinated 48 hours before he was to head the agency. A bomb exploded at the house of a finance official who had challenged the expenditures at the exact moment that Argentina had scored its fourth goal against Peru. His house was bombed. The mastermind of Operation Argentine Champion 1978 was Navy junta member Admiral Emilio Massera, with whom Kissinger had a 50-minute secret meeting June 24, 1978, the UPI reported. Massera was later exposed in Italy as the key Argentine in the propaganda to the P2 Masonic Lodge terrorism and banking scandal. And P2, you see, was headed up by Licio Gelli, who was at Ronald Reagan's inauguration. All these people have close links to the Reagan administration. And, of course, Pakistan, as I say, with the murder of Bhutto, Kissinger effected a coup there, as he had done in Peru in 1975. Massera was head of the, in Argentina, the Freemasonic Lodge terrorism and banking scandal. That was the Banco Ambrosiano in Italy. Massera was sentenced to life imprisonment December the 9th, this past year, 1985, for having supervised the torture center at the Navy Mechanics School, located right at the shadow of the stadium while Kissinger sat next to him, cheering Argentina's final victory. And this is a place where they burned people alive and tore their limbs out, as they did by the Savak in Iran that Henry Kissinger also put in power. And this article goes on, after all the evidence was in, Massera was convicted on numerous counts of homicide, kidnapping, torture, and theft, which took place at the same time before and during and after the World Cup, while they were cheering on and paying Peru to lose so that Argentina would be known for their athletics and their abilities to forget the junta. Kissinger sat in the junta box with Massera, with President Jorge Videla, Brigadier Orlando Agosti, and Treasury Minister Jose Martina de Haz. Videla, his other partner that sat with him, was also sentenced July the 9th for even more brutal crimes from 1976 to 81 in the dirty war that Massera had given, was also sentenced for. He was given perpetual reclusion with hard labor, solitary confinement. Agosti, the Air Force junta member, was sentenced to only 4.5 years, since the Air Force under his command had fewer proven cases of barbarism. Kissinger's best friend in Argentina, the Oxford-Harvard-educated de Haz, miraculously avoided being jailed, although the more than one judge put out a warrant for his arrest for economic sabotage, charging him with at least $5 billion to $35 billion in foreign debt, which he saddled Argentina with for 5 years in office as being fraudulent. He's still on the loose, as is Licio Gelli. De Haz's properties are under judicial embargo. De Haz was not tried in the dirty war, which covered up the multiple economic crimes of the Patria Financiera. He represented them, and despite the fact that his hit list names victims that were found, he was naming victims that were found in his office, the hit list. Kissinger helped Warner Communications of Atlanta invest in the soccer games with the money that they made from the soccer games to import soccer star Pelé from Brazil to play in New York Cosmos in 1975 and to make Trilateral Commission member Jimmy Carter president the next year. And the article goes then how Warner Communications and Kissinger's friends hired Mick Jagger to entertain and consult with Cosmos 1978 to make a big event. And the article goes on about Henry Kissinger setting up the Mexico City soccer games this past year. Kissinger had his hands on the ball in May 1983. He got himself appointed chairman of the United States World Cup Organizing Committee to get games held in the United States. And through the World Cup Organizing Committee set up in 1983, Kissinger goes around and plays patsies with people who are killing at the same time, taking billions from their country, putting in their dictatorships are in, and soccer has been a big cover for a lot of those activities. Kissinger had President Reagan kick a soccer ball around the White House lawn. Kissinger did nothing, but it set up his ability to navigate or interpret or to be part of the Mexican soccer games or wherever he goes, appointed with his nice position. Whatever it is, I know he doesn't play the game. You know he doesn't play it. But he's chairman of the United States World Cup Organizing Committee. And I bring this up because it's really ironic that Hess is watching Dallas on the one hand that has its connections to all of these assassination teams that I've talked about in the crime syndicate and the overview of the Permadex operation behind the wiping off of heads of states to put in dictatorships. And Hess has connections to Lord Hamilton in Scotland, where whose estate he went directly to, who became the person providing the passports and the ease with which Henry Kissinger went to the United States, then went into Army intelligence, worked with top Nazis, went to Harvard, and then began to work with the World Affairs Council and make State Department policies. And Hess is watching soccer, which has its connections all to those things. And that in these little articles published by Arnaud de Borchgrave in Reverend Moon's paper, the details of the Hess story just seem to smack of a lot of coincidences. Also, I want to say that in the same paper today, Wall Street Journal, I only have about 10 seconds to do it, another large article that's the front page of Section 2. Lawyers for the Hunt family have a history of stirring up trouble. I haven't outlined the troubles of Lamar Hunt and the whole Hunt family in Dallas, the whole chain of them. I'll do some of that next week, and the links to the Kennedy assassination there. And the attorney bringing their trial to Texas is Judge Barefoot Sanders, who was the U.S. attorney in Dallas at the time Kennedy was murdered. So, again, the Hunts set up what they called an American Volunteer Group, which was an assassination team to set up in deserts with the Minutemen and the Klan to kill American political people by various means, simulating heart attacks where they would pass over. That was one of their expertise described in Spooks by Jim Hogan. But here are the Hunts in Wall Street Journal, a Section 2 front page, and on the front page of Wall Street Journal today is Jonathan Quitney's article on the Mo Dallas-La Costa connections, which he doesn't jump right to the Kennedy assassination, but step one or two or three is understanding this team, then go to G. Robert Blakey and get an overgood view of how things are covered up the second time. But time is running out quickly now. This is Mae Bressel. I'll be back with you next week to do some of the articles like this in detail.